Imagine it's the dead of winter in Poland.
Oh, freezing cold.
Yeah, exactly. Hovering right around freezing. And you have 50,000 people relying on this one local combined heat and power plant.
Just to keep their homes warm.
Right. Keep the homes warm, keep the lights on. And from the outside, I mean, the facility looks completely secure.
Like a fortress.
Yeah. Tall fences, access gates, security cameras everywhere. But inside, the reality is entirely different.
Because they're already in.
Exactly. Hackers are just quietly navigating the internal network. They've actually just shut down a steam turbine,
Oh.
and they are actively disabling the process water treatment system. And you know what the most terrifying part is?
They didn't come through the front door?
Right. They didn't breach the main firewall, they didn't fish a power plant employee, and they didn't even pick a physical lock.
No, they bypassed all of it.
The entire fortress. They bypassed it by walking through a cellular network meant for like a random wind farm miles away.
It's just, it completely shatters our traditional assumptions about defense. I mean, we spend so much time and frankly, budget obsessing over the perimeter.
The main gates.
Yeah, the main gates of our digital fortresses. And we completely ignore these invisible architectural connections sitting right beneath our feet.
Which brings us to today. Welcome to today's deep dive. We know you are here because you don't just want those high-level headlines, right? You want to understand the actual mechanics of how these breaches happen.
The nuts and bolts.
Exactly. So today we are opening up a stack of three fresh, really revealing cybersecurity reports from August 2026.
And the mission today is mapping out those invisible side doors.
Yes, the side doors of modern cyber threats. Because we're moving way past the old days of, brute force hacking. Today we're looking at how attackers are bypassing these seemingly impenetrable defenses by finding, well, just the one obscure configuration we forgot to lock down.
Because the shift in tactics across these three sources, it's just profound. Attackers just realize that climbing a taller wall is, well, that's a waste of resources.
Why climb when you can walk around, right?
Right. So instead, they are crawling through private cellular networks. They're circumventing our newest cryptographic passkeys.
Without breaking any math, by the way.
Exactly. Not a single line of math broken.
Yeah.
And they are spinning up private, offline, artificial intelligence to basically automate their operations entirely in the dark.
So I want to start right in the thick of it with that Polish power plant, because this report from CERT Polska, released on August 8th, it literally reads like a thriller.
It really does.
It details a December 2025 cyber attack on a combined heat and power plant, or CHP, and we already set the stakes, 50,000 residents in the middle of winter.
The potential for disaster there was just immense. I mean, Poland's prime minister actually noted earlier in the year that two CHP plants were targeted.
Wow, two.
Yeah, and this report is the culmination of a 3-month investigation into this second facility. The attackers were like deep inside the operational technology network.
The OT network, that's the scary part.
Exactly. But thankfully, the defenders caught the anomaly. They started the recovery at 7:30 in the morning while the intruders were still actively roaming around the systems.
While they're still in there, that is wild.
Yeah, and because they caught it in progress, customers didn't actually lose heat or electricity.
So a massive near miss. But the entry point, that's what really caught my attention here. CERT Polska found that the initial breach didn't happen anywhere near the heat and power plant.
Nope, not even close.
It started at a wind farm. So how does a threat actor compromise a wind farm and end up controlling a steam turbine miles away?
Well, you have to trace the architecture. So
Yeah.
the attack path, it started with a FortiGate device
Okay.
over at the wind farm.
Okay.
And this piece of hardware was acting as both a firewall and a VPN concentrator for that specific facility. But it had three fatal flaws.
Let's hear them.
First, the VPN interface was exposed directly to the public internet.
Always a bad idea.
Yeah. Second, it allowed user accounts to exist without multi-factor authentication.
Oh man, which is just a cardinal sin in modern networking.
Absolutely cardinal sin.
Yep.
And third, the attackers managed to gain administrative privileges on this exposed device.
Of course they did.
Right. And investigators strongly suspect they used those admin rights to extract valid VPN credentials, which, essentially gave them a backstage pass to just explore the wind farm's internal network segments.
Okay, so the wind farm is fully compromised, but the report explicitly notes that the wind farm and the heat and power plant, They are entirely separate physical facilities.
Completely different locations.
Right. They don't even share an IT department. So I'm trying to visualize this. It's not like they're connected by some, you know, Ethernet cable stretched across the Polish countryside.
No.
So what was the bridge between them?
The bridge was a private APN, an access point name.
Okay, break that down.
Think of it as a dedicated cellular data network. So the local distribution system operator, the entity that manages the broader energy grid, they needed a way to remotely monitor all this equipment.
Like at various substations?
Exactly. At substations, the wind farm, the CHP plant.
So they essentially rented a private slice of a 5G or 4G cellular network just for their industrial equipment.
That is correct. They used cellular modems, specifically these Teltonika routers.
Yeah.
And they equipped them with SIM cards configured to use this private APN.
Okay.
And the operator required the equipment to communicate using this specific industrial protocol called Serial DMP 3.0.
DMP 3.0, right.
Yeah. And that protocol itself, that's standard for telemetry. It's just how industrial devices report their status and receive commands.
So the protocol wasn't the issue?
No, the protocol was fine. The catastrophic failure was in how the private cellular network itself was configured.
Right. The report calls it a permissive configuration. What does permissive actually mean when we're talking about a cell network?
It basically means it lacked client isolation.
Client isolation, okay.
In a properly secured network, especially one connecting, you know, highly sensitive infrastructure, devices should only be allowed to talk to a central, heavily monitored server.
They shouldn't be talking to each other.
Exactly. But because this private APN lacked that client isolation, any SIM card connected to the network could just freely communicate with any other SIM card on that same network.
Oh, wow. Okay, I think I'm getting it. So it's like they thought they were building separate, highly secure tunnels from headquarters to each individual facility.
Yes.
But in reality, they accidentally built this massive underground VIP lounge where anyone who had the right SIM card could just walk over and start messing with someone else's equipment.
That is a very, very accurate way to visualize it. The attackers basically found themselves inside that VIP lounge.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, they just pivoted from the compromised wind farm across that permissive cellular network and went straight over to a WAGO controller at the CHP plant.
And a WAGO controller? I mean, that isn't just a database. That's the physical brain that opens valves and spins turbines.
It is exactly what you don't want exposed.
Yeah.
And to add insult to injury here, when the attackers reached that controller, they found out it was still protected by its factory default admin credentials.
Default passwords on industrial controllers in 2026.
I know.
It's almost hard to believe. But taking a step back here, what is the ultimate takeaway from CERT Polska? Like, if they found this vulnerability, is there a patch we can deploy so this doesn't happen to other facilities?
That is the most sobering part of the entire investigation. There is no software patch for this.
Wait, really? No patch at all?
None. The investigators scrutinized the Teltonika routers, and they could not find any evidence that a software vulnerability like a CVE had actually been exploited.
So nothing was technically broken.
Right. The router's SSH service, the WAGO controller's web interface, the permissive APN itself, they were all operating perfectly.
Doing exactly what they were configured to do.
Precisely. The technology didn't fail. The architecture failed.
Wow.
And CERT Polska, they highlighted this as a monumental shift. To the best of their knowledge, this is the first documented real-world instance of attackers using a private APN as an attack vector to penetrate an industrial control network.
That's a huge milestone.
It is. So the immediate recommendation is that organizations must audit their private cellular networks and enforce client isolation right now. You just cannot treat a private APN as an inherently trusted zone just because it has the word private in the name.
And this directly impacts you, the listener, even if you don't work anywhere near a power plant. I mean, enterprise businesses globally are rolling out private 5G networks for their warehouses, their corporate campuses, logistics hubs.
All over the place.
Yeah. And if your internal architecture implicitly trusts any device that connects to it, your massive, expensive corporate firewalls are effectively useless. The side door is just wide open.
Because implicit trust is the fatal flaw. And, yeah. You know, we see that exact same theme, that danger of trusting the foundation in our second source.
Right. Let's look at the digital equivalent of that isolated network, because if we can't always trust the physical or cellular boundaries, we usually fall back on digital identity.
Which is supposed to be foolproof.
Supposed to be. We've been told for years now that the ultimate solution to credential theft is the cryptographic passkey.
Right. The unhackable replacement for passwords.
Exactly. Completely resistant to phishing. But our second source shatters that illusion of invincibility.
It really does.
This is a presentation from Black Hat USA 2026, delivered on August 5th by the security firm SpectreOps. And they, alongside two other research teams, basically demonstrated how to completely defeat these passkey protections in the wild.
But the distinction here is super crucial. SpectreOps did not break the cryptography.
Okay, so the math is safe.
The underlying math of the FIDO2 standard remains totally solid. What they attacked was the operating system's implementation of that standard.
So how does an operating system mess up an unhackable key?
By logging it where it shouldn't.
Ah.
The researchers uncovered an information disclosure vulnerability in the Windows event logging service. It's tracked as CVE-2026-34348.
Okay, so event logs. Those exist to help IT admins troubleshoot issues, right? Like seeing why a login failed or what services are crashing.
Exactly. But in this case, Windows was taking past YubiKey signatures and just storing them in the event logs in clear text.
Clear text.
Mm-hmm.
So the raw authentication data is just sitting there like a plain text document.
Yes.
Who could actually read that log?
Pretty much any authenticated, unprivileged remote user.
Are you kidding?
No. You didn't need to be an administrator. If you just had basic access to the system, you could read those signatures.
I want to make sure I am fully grasping the mechanics here. So the cryptographic lock on the door is unbreakable.
Right.
The digital key I hold in my hand cannot be forged. But the operating system essentially took a perfect wax impression of my key every single time I used it.
Yeah.
And then it just tucked that wax impression under the welcome mat for anyone to find.
The wax impression analogy. That captures the mechanism perfectly.
That's insane.
The event log was the welcome mat. The developers likely just passed that raw authentication assertion to the logging service for, you know, auditing purposes, completely underestimating the risk.
Because capturing that signature, that was only step one, right?
Oh, exactly. Captioning it was only step one.
So what was step two?
Relaying it. So by chaining these exposed clear text signatures with a validation weakness in Microsoft Entra ID.
Which is Microsoft's cloud-based identity and access management.
Right. By chaining those two things, attackers were able to just replay those tokens. They successfully impersonated highly privileged users.
Wow.
They completely bypassed security policies that strictly mandated phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication.
So a company could literally do everything right. They could buy the expensive hardware tokens, enforce strict zero trust policies, demand MFA for every single login.
Spend millions on security.
Yeah, and yet the underlying operating system was just silently leaking the exact material needed to tear all of that security down.
It's terrifying. Now, Microsoft has since rolled out mitigations for the Entra ID validation issue, and they released security updates for the Windows event logging service.
Across Windows 10, 11, and Server, I think.
But the research from SpectreOps and, you know, similar findings from Unit42 and Malema, it exposes a massive blind spot in our current security discourse.
You mean the debate over how passkeys should be stored?
Yes. The industry has been fiercely debating synced passkeys versus device-bound passkey.
Right. So a synced passkey lives in the cloud, accessed across multiple devices via Apple or Google, and a device-bound passkey is locked inside a physical hardware token like a YubiKey.
Exactly. And security purists argue that device-bound is the only truly secure method.
Because it can't be stolen from the cloud.
Right. But this research renders that entire debate completely irrelevant in this context.
No, because the OS leaks it anyway.
Right. If the local operating system itself exposes the authentication material after the key has done its job, if that wax impression is left under the mat, then the entire chain of trust collapses.
It does not matter if your key was bound to a piece of plastic or synced to a cloud server. The vulnerability was completely agnostic to the hardware.
Totally agnostic. It really forces you to question your foundations. You can implement the most advanced security protocols on the market, but defenders just have to assume that their authentication material might be compromised through a side channel they haven't even conceived of yet.
Which, by the way, is incredibly difficult to monitor manually. I mean, identifying a threat actor moving laterally through a permissive APN or detecting someone querying a specific event log for a clear text passkey signature, that requires analyzing just mountains of system data.
Mountains of it.
And that brings us to the third and honestly most chilling part of our deep dive. Because if defenders are struggling to sift through all this data, how are the attackers managing to find and exploit these incredibly nuanced vulnerabilities at scale?
Automation.
They automate. Let's look at our third source. This is a report from the security firm Genians analyzing a threat actor known as Kimsuki.
Right. Kimsuki is a highly sophisticated state-sponsored cyber espionage group operating under North Korea's Reconnaissance General Bureau.
And for the past year, the industry has been warning that hackers might use public AI chatbots like ChatGPT or Claude to draft more convincing phishing emails.
Yeah, that was the big fear. But the Genius report shows Kim Suki has moved far beyond just typing prompts into a public website.
They have completely internalized the technology.
Yes. Genius uncovered evidence that Kim Suki is actively building and deploying an offline AI stack directly on their own controlled servers.
But wait, why go to all the trouble of running it offline? The public models are incredibly powerful and, frankly, easy to use.
It comes down to operational security, or OPSE.
Ah.
Because when a hacker uses a commercial AI service, they are subject to that company's telemetry. The AI provider's security teams are monitoring prompts for malicious activity, and the API logs can expose the hacker's IP addresses, their targets, their methods.
You said get caught.
Exactly. By taking open source AI models offline, Kim Suki operates entirely in the dark. The researchers found them utilizing tools like Llama, GPT-4all, and MISD.
And those are frameworks designed to let you run large language models locally, right? Without an internet connection.
Yes. The researchers actually noted that Llama had generated cryptographic keys on its first launch, which indicates active setup. But the most revealing artifact they found was a configured database file associated with GPT-4all, and it was named localdocs.v3.db.
Right. The report mentions this file is tied to something called ARAG Retrieval Augmented Generation. I've heard the term thrown around in tech circles, but how does ARAG actually help a hacking group process their data without the internet?
Well, it solves a major limitation of AI. A standard AI model only knows what it was trained on up to a certain date, right?
Right.
It doesn't know what files you have on your hard drive. ARAG bridges that gap. It basically takes a specific folder of documents, in Kim Suki's case, likely terabytes of stolen, highly sensitive data, and vectorizes them.
Vectorizes, so it turns the text into mathematical representations so the AI can search it quickly.
Precisely. So when the hacker asks a question, the RAG system retrieves the relevant stolen documents, feeds them into the offline AI model, and generates an answer based strictly on their private loot.
So they aren't relying on the AI's general knowledge at all. They're using it as an ultra-advanced search engine for the data they've already exfiltrated.
Exactly.
Which brings up a detail from the report that I really want to unpack. The Genius researchers actually recover a specific prompt that a Kim Suki operator fed into their offline AI.
Oh, yeah. It's a fascinating look into their workflow.
Yeah. So the operator asked the AI to analyze a data set for cryptocurrency wallet details, Gmail credentials, and site registration histories.
Pretty standard stuff.
Right. But it was the instruction at the end of the prompt that really got me. The hacker wrote, "The more detailed the analysis, the better. Please do not do it haphazardly."
Do not do it haphazardly.
You're talking to a person. What is the ultimate goal of instructing an AI like a junior analyst instead of just writing a traditional script to parse the data for passwords?
Because a traditional script is rigid. It uses regular expressions to look for specific patterns, like, you know, a string of numbers that looks like a credit card.
Right.
But human communication is messy. Passwords might be buried in a conversational email, or a wallet seed phrase might be saved in a really poorly formatted text file.
And a script would just miss that.
Completely. But an AI model understands context. By asking it to analyze the data meticulously, the operator is using the AI to infer value from unstructured data that a simple script would just completely pass over. Genius refers to this as the research and knowledge acquisition stage.
So they're essentially standing up a localized malicious intelligence analyst.
Yeah.
But it doesn't stop at analysis, does it? Because the report also noted the presence of developer libraries like Llama Sharp and Microsoft's Semantic Kernel on Kim Suki's infrastructure.
And that is where this escalates from espionage to automated warfare.
Also.
Semantic Kernel and Llama Sharp, they're software development kits. They allow programmers to embed AI capabilities directly into custom software applications, typically written in C# or .NET.
Oh, wow. So they aren't just using AI in a chat window on their server. They are collecting the components to build AI directly into the malware itself.
Yes. Combine that with the fact that researchers also found OpenAI's Whisper speech-to-text files on their servers, and the implication is pretty clear. They are engineering custom malware that can transcribe audio, read documents, and make contextual decisions completely autonomously.
Autonomously. Wow. If threat actors are deploying this level of sophistication using offline AI to craft attacks and parse data, How does the defense even keep up? I mean, for years, we've told employees to look for visual clues. Look for the stilted translation, the clumsy formatting, the fake CEO email asking for gift cards.
Those visual tells are dead.
Dead.
Completely. An AI-generated spear phishing lure fed with the context of a company's actual internal communications via our Edge system. It will be indistinguishable from a legitimate email.
So what do we do?
Genian's urgent warning is that defenders must completely shift their focus away from the presentation of the attack and strictly monitor the execution of the payload.
Meaning we have to look for behavioral tells.
Precisely. You have to correlate what the code actually does once it's on the machine. Defenders need to aggressively monitor for anomalous execution of shortcut files, like LNK files, obfuscated PowerShell commands, hidden scheduled tasks being created out of nowhere, and, you know, unusual traffic communicating with sites like GitHub.
Because there is no software patch for a flawlessly written AI-generated email.
No. The entire weight of defense now rests on behavioral monitoring and just assuming breach.
Man, we have covered incredible ground today. Let's synthesize this journey for you because the overarching theme here is vital. Security in 2026 is no longer about just applying Patch Tuesday updates and buying physical security keys. It is about rigorously auditing the entire interconnected chain of trust.
Because the perimeter is officially a myth.
A total myth. We started by exploring how physical assumptions fail. If you don't ensure your private cellular APN actively isolates its clients, a hacker can literally wander from a wind farm straight into a power plant's water controls.
Just walk right in.
Yeah. Then we move to digital assumptions. You have to know exactly how your operating system handles your cryptographic passkeys, or you might be leaving a clear text wax impression of your unhackable key sitting right in an event log.
Under the welcome mat.
Exactly. And finally, we are seeing the automation of these exploits. Nation-state actors are utilizing private, offline AI to perfectly disguise their entry, process their stolen data, and build intelligent malware.
The through line here is relevance to you. Your enterprise VPNs, the Windows event logs running silently in the background of your laptop right now, the private 5G networks your logistics team just deployed, they all rely on the exact same trust models we discussed today.
So true.
The vulnerabilities that bring down a Polish power plant are the same architectural flaws that can compromise a corporate database.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final lingering thought to mull over regarding that AI development. We know hackers are taking AI offline to ingest stolen data and write better malware on their own servers.
Right.
But how long until these offline AI models are compressed and optimized enough to be deployed directly inside an infected corporate network?
Oh, wow.
Imagine a piece of malware acting as an autonomous agent. It lands on a server, totally cuts off its command and control connection to the outside world so it never triggers a firewall alarm, and just watches.
That is a terrifying thought.
It learns your internal work schedules, it reads your emails, and it adapts its lateral movement to your specific security measures in real time. You secure the front door, but the intruder is already living in the walls, learning your habits completely autonomously.
Things are moving fast.
They really are. Keep your eyes open, question your configurations, and stay curious. Until next time.